pleased with starting our Easter series today to help prepare us for Easter. And as part of this Easter series, we're going to look at expectations versus reality. Expectations. All of us have expectations, whether they're high expectations or low expectations. We all expect certain things in different spheres of life. I expect from myself that when I wake up in the morning that I make myself a good coffee. And if I don't meet that expectation, I'm disappointed. I'll often make another one and just put the one in the sink. That's my expectation in the morning. Now, some of our expectations come into our life, and fast food's a good one to pick on. I had a burger this week from Carl's Jr. And you see those photos, and you see you go, it looks so good on the screen. And as you can see, that's the photo of what my burger should have been. And then on the left, it was squished. The beef patty was sliding off to the side. It still tasted good, but it just didn't meet the expectation of what it was. And for those who have kids, sometimes our expectation is on the left there, that perfect photography image where the kid's perfect and it's all good. And but the reality is the kids are crawling all over you. And it's just excellent pain. And sometimes the reality, it's not necessarily that it's worse. Sometimes it's greater. Kids crawling over you, pulling your ears. And so we're going to look at these expectations. But the expectations that the Jewish and the Israelite people had of who the Messiah was. We sit after the Messiah has come. And so when we read the Bible, we don't necessarily have expectations of what he is going to be because we read the reality of what's going to happen. But prior to the Messiah, prior to Jesus, the Israelites and God's people had expectations of what the Messiah was going to be. And specific expectations and the reality of what happened was different from what they expected. But as I said, it was actually far greater. And so we're going to compare these expectations versus reality. Starting with the first expectation is that the Jewish people expected that the Messiah would be a king. You see, way back in the time of Abraham, 2,000 years before Jesus, the people expected that they would have a king. God knew that the people would ask for a king, and so he set up this kingly line that they would use in Israel. You see, back in Abraham, well before the kings, in Genesis 17, God says that I will make you very fruitful. I will make nations of you, and the kings will come from you. This is repeated again in the time of Moses, at the time of the law in Deuteronomy. It says, when you enter the land the Lord your God is giving you, and you have taken possession of it, settled in it, and then you say, let us set a king over us, like all the other nations around us. Be sure to appoint over you a king the Lord your God chooses. He must be a king from among your fellow Israelites. Do not place a foreigner over you, one who is not an Israelite. The king, moreover, must not acquire great numbers of forces for himself, or make people return to Egypt to get more of them. For the Lord has told you, not to go back that way again. See, before the expectation that Jesus, that the Israelites had, that the Messiah would be a king, that God promised that there would be a king in Israel. He knew that the people would expect a king. And so, using that expectation and using the fact that they wanted a king, God started to mention and build the expectation that the Savior that was promised all the way back in the fall would be a king. And he started to demonstrate this in 2 Samuel. So through the prophet Samuel, in chapter 7, Samuel prophesies, or Nathan through Samuel prophesies these words. Now, Saul had been king and nation of Israel. He'd been replaced by David, and this promise goes towards David that the kingly line of David, which was from the tribe of Judah, would endure forever. So the Israelites had this expectation that the kingly line would endure forever. And so you can read that and you go, well, what does that have to do with the Messiah? What does that have to do with Jesus and that expectation? I've got a lot of passages here today, so if you're taking notes, see that when it comes to the Psalms. Psalm 89, verse 24, says, my faithful love will be with him, and through my name his horn will be exalted. I will set his hand over the sea, his right hand over the rivers. He will call out to me, you are my Father, my God, the rock, my Savior, and I will appoint him to be my firstborn, the most exalted kings of the earth. I will maintain my love to him forever, and my covenant with him will never fail. I will establish his line forever, his throne as long as the heavens endure. So the Israelites started to build an expectation that the Messiah, the firstborn of God, would be a king. This king would come from the line of Judah, and his kingdom would endure forever. Later in Psalm 89, it says that his line will continue forever. It will be established forever like the moon and faithful witness in the sky. His line will endure forever. And Isaiah builds on this. You'll know this passage. Isaiah 7. It says, then Isaiah said, hear now, you house of David. But is it not enough to try the patience of you? Will you try the patience of my God also? Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a son. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and you will call him Emmanuel. He'll be eating curds and honey, and he knows him enough to reject the wrong and choose the right. For before the boy knows enough to reject the wrong and choose the right, the land of the two kings you dread will be laid waste. The Lord will bring on you and on your people and on the house of your father a time unlike any since Ephraim broke away from Judah, and he will bring a king to Assyria. You see, the Israelites were starting to build this expectation that the king, that the Messiah, the one that would save, would serve as king. Would serve not as just a heavenly king, but would serve as an earthly king. That he would be royal, that he would sit upon the throne. The same throne that David sat on. This is what they expected. They expected this royal king. They expected this king who would take over the earth. You see that in Isaiah 9. It says, for to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness, and from that time on forever, the zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. When you read stumbled and worked through. This was exciting. This was something they held firm onto. We could have a king that our nation would endure forever, that we would overthrow and would control the entire world. This was exciting, and this was an incredible expectation that they held firm to. But as the nation of Israel, as time passed, for those who understand a little bit of the history of Israel, David's son was Solomon. And Solomon's son, Solomon had a huge empire, a huge kingdom, didn't expand the entire world. But when David's son, Solomon's sons, took over, it went down. The kingdom was divided. The kingdom was divided to the northern and the southern kingdom. And from there, it just became worse and worse and worse, to the point where they were taken over. The northern kingdom was taken over by the Babylonians, and then the southern kingdom was taken over by them. And there was no one sitting upon the throne. And the Israelites sitting there going, what now? God promised that the Messiah, he would be a king. God promised that the throne of David would endure forever. However, we're sitting in a time where there is no king. The king of God is not the king. What happened? God speaks through the prophet Hosea and says this: the Israelites lived many days without king or prince, without sacrifice or sacred food, without ephod or household gods. Afterwards, the Israelites will return and seek the Lord their God and David their king. And they will come trembling to the Lord and to his blessings in the last days. And so for the Israelites, who did not have a king at this stage, and confident in his promise, that someday, that when we return to the land of Israel, when we return, God will once again establish the throne. The same throne and the same line of David. That is what will happen. And Isaiah's prophecy will come true, and we'll see this established forever. But when the nation of Israel went back, most of them went back, and the king line of David was not reestablished. Israel from that time never again had a king. They were always ruled by various things. They had various leaders throughout the history and time, but the establishment of the kingdom was not there. It was not reestablished. God promised that it would be. And so the Israelites during this time and during various words continue to build this view and this picture that God would come back again. That the Messiah would come and he would be a kingdom. He would be a king and lead the kingdom. And so through various rulers and to the point when the Messiah did come, the Romans, expected. See, Isaiah 11 says, a shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse, and his roots a branch that will bear fruit, and the Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and of understanding, the Spirit of counsel and of might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. Amos says, in that day, I will restore David's fallen shelter. I will repair its broken walls. I will and restore its ruins and will rebuild it as it used to be, so that they may possess the remnant of Eden, and all the nations will bear my name. every word that God had prophesied. But it went beyond that. You see, the Israelites expected an earthly king. But even God, though God used the imagery of the earthly king, he always had in plan something far greater. Something far greater. You see, the Messiah is a king. The Messiah will always be king. You see, John 18 says this: my kingdom is not of this world. This is Jesus. This is the Messiah. It's not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. And now my kingdom is from another place. You are a king, said Pilate. See, he's being asked questions by Pilate just before Jesus was to be crucified on the cross. Pilate says, you are a king then. But Jesus answered, you say that I am a king. In fact, the reason I was born, I came into this world, was to testify the truth. That everyone on the side of truth listens to me. What is truth? Retorted Pilate. With this, they went out to the Jews and gathered there and said, I find no basis of charge against him. But it is your custom, the Jewish custom, for me to release one of your prisoners at the time of the Passover. Do you want me to release the king of the Jews? Is Pilate spending time with Jesus just before he was crucified? Just before? Asking his questions, discovering what is true about this Messiah. And what Pilate discovers is that the Messiah is the king. He is the king that they've been waiting for. He is the one that we're waiting for. But the reality was, is that he was a different sort of king. You see, Jesus was coronated as king. We've got a new king in England coming soon, and the preparation for the coronation, all the pomp and ceremony is coming. But Jesus didn't have that. Jesus is our king, but he's a humble king. He didn't wear the crown with jewels and everything. Jesus wore the crown of thorns. Jesus was not coronated in a palace. He was not coronated anywhere else, but his coronation was upon the cross. That Jesus was raised up on the cross. His crown was placed upon his head. And a sign stood among him that said, King of the Jews. King of the Jews. Placed there by Pilate, who recognized the reality